everyone, and welcome to The Art of Podcasting, Episode 8, Pre-Production, recorded April 8, 2012, and brought to you by Element OP Productions, elementop.com. First off, happy Easter, everybody. This is being recorded on Easter night, and we hope you had a happy and safe day. If you don't celebrate Easter, then happy day after the full moon following the solstice of whichever hemisphere you're in. There you go.
Happy chocolate gathering day.
There you go.
And we're dedicated. We do this on Easter.
We do. Because I didn't bother to ask anybody if they had plans and we should cancel it. And this week we're going to be talking about pre-production. What you do before you do what you do.
This will be the shortest podcast ever.
How you get the show ready and that sort of stuff. And with me, as always, are my fellow contributors to the show, the brains of the show. I have the voice, they have the brain. Actually, James has a better voice than I don't really actually do anything. And so this week with us, we have James Messer, the professor. Hey, James, what's up?
Howdy, howdy. It's so nice to be here. Thank you for having me. And unlike Steve, who we'll talk to just in a moment, I am in my regular studio tonight, so I'm a little bit fortunate I did not have to travel anywhere today.
There we go. By the way, his website is professormesser.com.
Thank you, sir.
And Mr. Steve Terabino of howtopodcast.biz. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hello, Mark. Hello, James. Good to be here. Yes, I'm broadcasting from my parents' house in the Villages. The Villages is in Florida. It's a humongo retirement community. It's so big it has its own zip code. Wow. And luckily he has working computers here and half a webcam.
So your parents moved to Florida and then you followed them? Is that how that works?
We actually moved down on the same day. They moved here and I just kept driving until I hit Tampa.
Okay. And you just got tired of driving and said, this is where I live now.
Yes. It's hot enough here. I'll stop.
I'm at the gates of hell. I'm not quite in yet.
Yeah, it was good. It's a good time. It was a good Easter. Good hanging out with the family.
I've heard you guys talk about that. Your dad's a techie guy, right? He worked worked in or co-owner of your shop at one point, right?
He's actually my employee. I got to boss him around for a change. I have to thank my dad for getting me into tech. You know, he bought computers when they were first coming out. We had like a TI-99 4A and a PC Junior. And
there you go.
Loved. Yeah, and that's how I got into it. So I have to thank him for that. And then, it all goes around in a big circle. So I got to help him learn some tech when he was working with me.
Yeah, so Steve sent me an email a little while before the show started and said, hey, are we still doing a show? And I said, yep. And he went, holy crap, Dad, do you have a computer that works?
I'm like, do you have a webcam? He's like, yeah. And he pulled out a Logitech cam from, I think, the late 80s.
It was a very lightweight model, only 15 pounds, right?
Yeah. It definitely does not work with Windows 7, so I'm using my MacBook for that.
Okay. So, yeah, I had an old camera that I pulled out. I bought years ago, never used it. It was brand new in the box. The cellophane had not been unwrapped, and there's not a computer it works on because it's so old. It doesn't work on anything I own.
Go figure.
So, James, it's perfect. Don't change anything.
I know. Well, you've seen this, of course, in the show notes. It's one of those things that the poor IT people, whenever a holiday comes along, you know that they're busy doing something. Whenever there's a Thanksgiving, whenever there's a New Year's, and whenever apparently there's Easter, that was my day. So I spent the day doing website maintenance, getting things upgraded that I said 3 months ago that I would upgrade and waited and delayed. So things like WordPress, get it upgraded. And I put in some new security systems to automatically look for people trying to brute force their way in and block them before they get very far, and added some caching. So this will all be either phenomenal tomorrow and the website will be going like gangbusters, or it will be an enormous flop and it will all come crashing down and we'll find out tomorrow.
Or it will be one of those under construction animated GIFs.
That's all it will be if this does not go well. It's one of those where you just want to make one change. And then you think, maybe I'll do something else. The problem is that it's all working right now. So it's not like you have to upgrade, but you really should for so many different reasons. Right. I really didn't want to touch it, but I waited long enough. I just had to get it done. So that was my day. I only broke it one time, so I feel pretty good.
That's awesome.
Ah, yeah. Good job.
As we've mentioned on this show a few times, I run Drupal as the the website for elementopia.com. And every time I log into the admin panel, literally every day, there's a new update. Would you like to do it? It's like, no, I wait until they get to the triple digits. And then I just pick a day and do them all at once. Cause you never know which one of those is going to break.
Right.
And I have heard people say that you can just click upgrade all and go and Drupal can handle it. I've been too scared to try that. I've always gone one by one, click update. Does it work? Okay. Next one, update. Does it work? Okay. Next. And
that was me. The most thing I did, the biggest thing I did today, the most time consuming thing I did was back up my database, copy off all my WordPress files, make the backups. And you know, that takes an hour. And then you push the upgrade automatic button and that takes 30 seconds and it's done.
Right.
And so, yes, I spent 45 minutes or an hour getting everything backed up and fortunately did not have to use it.
Right. After last week, after we did this show last Sunday, the next day, Monday morning, I added the Envolve chat bar to elementopia.com.
Oh, yes. I saw that.
So far, nobody's cared, but it's there because I thought it was cool.
I'll find it. I'm going there right now.
There you go. Clicky, click, 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 click.
Very nice.
Okay, so let's move right into the topic at hand. And I'm sure we'll find that we have very different ways of doing this as time goes on. And I'm interested to see what that is. But we've talked about, you know, how to record clean audio, how to make sure you've got everything done. We talked about post-production. So this is pre-production. And for me, this is one of my sticking points. I am, you know, I'm a Boy Scout at heart. Always be prepared. Or as my friends of the Jewish Boy Scouts said, always be insured. That was a joke, by the way. always be prepared. And I'm super prepared. I'm over prepared. I do everything too much. And I kind of catch flack for that. But so when we go on here, we're talking about pre-production. I think you may find that my anal retentiveness shows, but we'll have to see. So we'll just go from the top. I'm going to lay this out. You're starting an entirely new podcast. All right. So this is not an episode of a podcast. This is a new show. Muriel's Quilting Hour that we invented last week.
Yes.
The three of us
are
going to start this new show. And so what do we need to do to make this show go? So to begin with, the talent, the on-air talent is, or the on-air talent less, however you want to look at it. Is where you got to go. So how do you go about, we'll start with you, Steve. You're going to do a show, you're going to host it, but you want co-hosts, regular co-hosts or maybe recurring guests, that sort of thing. How do you figure out who's going to be on your show with you?
Well, it depends. There's two ways a show like Muriel's Quilting Hour could come up. And one is that you've been doing your regular podcast. Muriel has been on your show a couple times and people just love her. You know, every time she comes on, you know, it's going to be a good show. She covers quilting from like A to Z and answers everybody's questions about the subject. And you think she's just really darn good. That might be the way you come up with, well, why don't we just do a show about that, about quilting? And then that's easy. You know, Muriel's good. She's gone through the trial of how good of a guest she's going to be because she's been on your other show. And so you know them enough that you trust them and they'd make a good co-host. And then you have the other extreme where you just come up with an idea of like, why don't I do a show about hard drives or something like that? Like I did with My Hard Drive Died. And I basically just said, well, who knows tons about hard drives? And a couple of my listeners kept talking about Scott Moulton. So I talked to Scott. I had him on an episode of Pod Nuts and he did good. And I'm like, this guy really knows his stuff. So, bam, we did a show about hard drives. I mean, that's how my shows have come about. They've all kind of come through the original Pod Nuts show as a guest. And the guys that I felt like were exceptional, we usually ended up doing a separate show with just them. And that's how I get my co-hosts. So that's a great way to vet co-hosts. And, you know, it's like tryouts. You could almost look at it that you're seeing who's good in your community and you might want to do a show with. That's how I've done it.
All right. James, assuming you're not married to him, how do you find a co-host?
Well, that's sort of my problem. I don't know. I never have had to find a co-host before. Almost everything that I've done has just been me. And most recently, although they tell you not to work with people you're related with, brought my wife in on the most recent What a Week podcast that we do. And we've never really gone out and found co-hosts or anyone else to be on the show before. It's one of those things that perhaps for what I have been doing. I just haven't progressed to that level where I've had that many shows to do or needed that many guests to come on. So it really hasn't been a situation where I would have needed them to do that. And then, of course, you run into those situations where how do you get someone on? What's the purpose going to be? I was listening to another podcaster who had a popular show say that there were some guests that he pays to be on the show because his podcasts were profitable. He had advertising to do it. But he said the vast majority of people, because the podcast was popular, were just doing it for free because for them, it was also marketing and getting their name out at the same time. And I would imagine if I had to be in a position like that, it would probably be a combination of one of those two things.
Yeah, I haven't reached the point of paying people yet, but I have promised all of my co-hosts that at some point, when their shows start making money, they will see some of it.
Now, wait a second, Steve. Have you heard that? I have not heard this.
That was not the original agreement, Mark.
I've not heard any of that.
Oh, I promised everybody on my other shows. I didn't promise you that.
Oh, that's funny.
You know, and with our average of 9 listeners a week, the money, the royalty check should be in the mail soon, guys.
It's like doubled.
Yeah, it has. It's awesome. It's
fabulous.
I think maybe you've downloaded it twice a week. Now
I changed my IP addresses for that very reason.
That's why the Onion router is good for that. So you've got your recurring panel set. What about guests? So you want to bring in like a week to week guest. Like I do that. Steve, I know you do that on Podnuts Daily. How would you go about finding those guys? And Steve, you go about it, or at least you used to, in what I consider a unique way. It was just sort of a raise your hand method. Do you still do it that way?
Yeah, it's gone through a couple different changes, but mainly it is sign up on this form and you're on, basically. It's worked out pretty well because the guys that are serious about doing it and have it takes some bravery. I could tell a lot of these guys that come on, they're like, they got some cojones to just come on and speak in front of who knows how many people. And to a person that they've never talked to before. So you don't get as many people as you would think. It also depends on how big your show is. It's worked out for me because the computer, you can't be a real dummy and be in the computer repair industry. So when my target audience, computer repair business owners, when I ask them if they want to come on the show and one of them says, yes, I would, it's usually worked out that they're pretty darn good and they're a good guest. So though it might sound a little reckless, I just do it. Like you said, who wants to be on? Okay. You? Okay. Here, let's do it.
So do you have trouble finding people at that way? I mean, have you had trouble getting a consistent feed week after week of guests?
No. The only trouble I did have is usually my doing where, I run out of dates on the form for people to fill out, or I take the form down for whatever reason. Like I have too many guests that month. So it hasn't been. It's actually been just right. I've never had too many and too little.
Because I know on one of the shows that I do, the Tightwad Tech, we like to feature a listener spotlight, which is that sort of thing. Somebody who is a listener, we say, hey, step up, volunteer, and be on the show. And we like to do that once a month. And we sometimes will go 2 or 3 months because we don't have anybody who wants to do that.
So, right.
But I think what's different is your entire listening audience is often trying to sell themselves, promote a business. They have a product to sell. In many cases, the product is themselves.
No. I disagree. I've seen this also in like technical forums and places that say, oh, people come in to just plug their own stuff. And I would say 90% of my guests don't. They're just people who want to share knowledge.
Okay. So maybe I just, what I think is interesting is often, and you said, sort of alluded to that, it takes courage. People often think they don't have anything to contribute. They don't think they have any knowledge or any ability, but the fact is that most people are pretty interesting once you get to talking to them.
Yeah, people vastly underestimate how much they have to share, and I think that's the main problem with not getting as much guests as you would think you would get. As people are nervous and they're like, I don't really know as much as the last guest, but yeah, you nailed it. Everybody has something to give and everybody's viewpoint is different. And that's what made the show successful, is different ways of doing different things and different viewpoints on every episode. And it really worked out pretty good.
So the way I do it on my shows, I have three different shows, really, where it's a rotational guest sort of thing every week. And I just have a list of prospective guests, people in the field who are experts or people who might have a product they're trying to sell. Generally, if you give people the opportunity to pitch a product, they'll take it. But, you know, I always tell them ahead of time that this isn't a sales pitch. You have the opportunity to talk up your product, certainly, but what we're interested in is your expertise in the field. And so I just, you know, I email people or call them or find their contact information. And we've gotten to talk to some really amazing people. Actually, I was looking back over the list. We're coming up on episode 100 for our Tightwad Tech Show. And over the last 100 episodes, we have really talked to some pretty amazing people in the field, you know, CEOs of companies. And we talked to one of my favorite guests was David Thornburg, who worked at the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center back in the 70s, who pretty much invented everything. He was one of those guys. And
it's awesome.
And it was great. I just emailed him up and said, here's the show we do. Here's the topic we like to discuss. Here's the time that we do it. Would you like to do it? He said, sure. And most of the time, people do. I mean, every now and then you have to work around some scheduling, but there, I can't think of more than five people who've just said, no, I'm not interested. It just doesn't happen. You call them up and you find them. But the trick is to find somebody in the field and tell them why they would want to be on your show. That's the way I look at it. It's like we have this audience. This is the topic. We think the audience would benefit from you in X area or in X, Y, and Z areas. And generally that seems to work. What does your, when you have had to do that, what does your sort of cold email look like, Steve?
To get guests?
Yes.
You know, the way I promote it mainly when I need guests is I'll talk about it on the show. I'll say, you know, we're looking for people. And another thing I do that actually helps is a lot of times when I have a guest and I know they were kind of nervous in the beginning, at the end of the show, I'll talk about it on the show and say, now, remember when you were nervous in the beginning? How do you feel now? And they'll be like, wow, this was so much fun. 5 minutes into the show, I forgot I was even on doing a podcast. We were just having a conversation. Stuff like that helps a lot. But I don't usually send out emails. I will do it via the show saying, you know, please sign up. If you want to be a guest on the show, go to podnuts.com/guests or whatever we had set up at the time.
All right. James, what about you? Any comments?
I used to have, in a previous life, I had a job where I had built a podcast studio for internal company podcasts. And let me tell you, there's nothing more gripping or interesting than an internal company podcast. But one of the advantages, though, you have when doing this is people who know things in the organization really don't have a choice. You can't run. That's your desk. You are compelled by the manner of keeping your job to have a conversation with me in some way. So it was very easy to get guests. The hard part was taking people that normally will talk to you in the hallway, and you've all dealt with this, is that people that are seemingly jovial and very happy to have a conversation with you, as soon as you put a microphone or some type of recording device near them, suddenly clam up instantly. We had this process we went through, and you talk about some of this in the show notes, where you have some questions and things already planned, or you even do a pre-interview with them about what topic should we be talking about, how should I lead you into those things. And another interesting one that you put in there, which was really good, was make sure they have a good mic, because everybody who is not doing podcasts, they'll just talk in a phone. They don't know that's horrible, miserable audio that nobody should be listening to or wanting to listen to. So we would buy them a nice Logitech USB headset and ship it to them, and they just keep it when they're done. Like, that's your headset. Maybe you'll do another one of these just to make sure we had at least something to talk about and some good audio to get out of it.
Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to bring up is your hosts. let's take that first. The recurring hosts. Steve, in your case, the door-to-door geeks, the guys that you've said, I want you to be on a show on a regular basis. How do you manage their equipment to make sure that their equipment matches your standards? And James just told you the way I do it. I buy the equipment and send it to them. That way I get to pick it. So what I've done is I've sent them an Amazon gift card with a link and said, buy this with this Amazon gift card. This is what you will buy. And actually I've got my newest host for one of my shows that just came on a couple of weeks ago. I've got some, a mic and a digital audio converter and a couple of cables that I'll be sending out to her tomorrow.
Nice. So
that's the way I do it. I consider that an investment. I can spend, you know, $100 on them and make sure they get good audio, and that's an investment in my network. It's not necessarily the way everybody's going to want to do it, but it's the way I like to do it. So, Steve, what about you?
Yeah, if first of all, having your guests sound good is crucial if you want to have a professional sounding show. So, yeah, it's really something to look at. I first listened to how they kind of do. I made the requirement that you have to have a headset mic or a decent mic and a wired internet connection, no wireless. I didn't really care about the webcam too much, but either a decent headset mic or a good just regular mic and a wired connection. And so I put that requirement out there, and some people will come in and maybe have a terrible headset or none. And I find that guys that are on the show consistently, and I know they're going to be, I have sent them Plantronics headsets, which work really well with Skype. It was the D400, which they made into like the DSP400. I could have the number wrong. And Door-to-Door Geek used it forever before upgrading. And they're pretty good sounding headsets. So I've sent out a couple of them. I think they're like $40 on Amazon. I don't know if they still make them, but they sounded really good coming through Skype. Nice balance and not too bassy, not too trebly. So I've sent out equipment.
Yeah, the Plantronics headset is what I always send them to. It's my go-to.
Do you know the model, Mark?
I can't think of it offhand. It's the big gamer one with the big headphones and the boom arm is what I send them.
Mine's a little slimmer, but I'm not sure. I'll check it. Maybe I'll throw it in the show notes when I find out.
Yeah, and the USB version, so that way you get away from the sound from the sound card.
Good point. Yes, definitely get the USB versions.
I didn't always do that. I used to tell them it didn't matter, but now it does matter.
Totally.
You get much better results out of the USB.
Totally.
Okay, so what about a guest then? Let's turn it around. Somebody who's just going to be on show one time, maybe twice. What do you do for them? And for me, I make recommendations. We strongly recommend that you have a headset mic or that you have a wired connection, and we do things over Skype. But I have done interviews with cell phones with people driving down the road before. And the way I look at it is we're encroaching on your time. I have asked you to be with me. I'm not going to set too many rules on it. So I have a list of recommendations when I send them the pre-show package. And we'll talk about that a little bit. I send every potential guest a document that says, here's the way things are going to go. And here's the way we recommend. What about you, Steve? How do you do that?
Yeah, pretty much. I recommend. No, I actually say that they need to have a headset. Like I talked about before, those requirements. A lot of times people won't, or they'll say, can I try on my phone? Can I try with the Apple iBud headset? And, you know, I've done shows on with pretty much anything, and I'd basically take what I could get, but I'd love if they did have what I recommend.
Right. And, you know, you have to make that balance. If the content is outstanding and the sound quality is bad, sometimes you just have to accept that. Have you ever had somebody whose sound quality was just so bad you didn't hear the show?
Yes. I had one guest. He had a wireless laptop, no headset, using the laptop mic and the laptop webcam as he was walking around his shop, smoking, walking inside and outside of the building. Worst quality ever. I had to can the show, and I just kept the part where I read everybody's emails, which was just me talking. And maybe he had two things to say that I kept in there that was actually, you know, sounded good. But I just couldn't, in my mind, I couldn't sacrifice the professionalism of the recording. It was too unprofessional. It was unlistenable.
Right. And actually, I had a situation just come up this last week where I was prepared to do a monologue show because the guests didn't work out. And I've never done one of those, and I counsel against that. But I was prepared to just go on and talk for an hour if I had to, because, sometimes it bees that way sometimes. James, you got any comment on that?
Well, you mentioned getting audio, and sometimes you do have to get it any way that you can, although walking around and smoking, I agree, is probably not the optimal. And one of the things that we did in our podcast studio is I knew I would be talking with a lot of people who at times didn't even use computers. So getting them on Skype, plugging in a USB headset was way outside the scope of what was possible. Right. But having them talk on the phone was reasonable. And of course, phone audio is kind of sketchy to begin with. To this day, I'm amazed at the number of webinars and online seminar events I go into, and it's one person on the other side and they're using a speakerphone. And I don't understand, why are you talking into a speakerphone and making the audio that much worse? So normally we'll make them at least use a wired headset or handset, a wired telephone, not a cordless telephone. And we got a digital hybrid, which is effectively an interface into the normal telephone system. But what it does is allows you to plug your mixer in and get the best possible quality from that phone line. And that really made a difference. Whenever we had to take somebody over the phone, we at least knew we had the best audio possible.
Yeah, I was once interviewed on the Computer America radio show, Kerry Holtzman, who I yep. know both of you guys know. And their pre-show instructions were you have to be on a corded phone. Mm-hmm. I don't own a corded phone.
Right.
I went to the store and could not find a cord. There weren't any. I made a special trip to the store. I went to three different stores. There weren't any corded phones. They don't exist anymore.
Right.
So I did it on a cell, on a cordless phone, and it was fine.
Yeah, I think I used Skype out for the first time I was on Computer America. And I've also used Skype in for guests who want to just use a regular phone, and that's worked out pretty well.
I use Google Voice for that through Gmail, the Gmail calling feature.
Yeah.
It works really well. The sound quality is as good as phone quality gets. I mean, you're just not going to get very good with sound quality, and right. It's easy. So I can do it on the same machine I do all the Skyping on. I just make a Gmail call out. Works really well.
Cool.
So let's you've never had to have this problem, this situation occur. I have. So I wanted to talk about it. What happens if you ask a co-host to be on a show and then it turns out they're just not very good? You know, hopefully you would do some coaching up and some recommending. And then at some point you might have to just fire a co-host. Have either of you had that situation arise?
If that is going to happen to me, then I'm going to lose half my stuff. It's not going to be a pretty situation.
Yeah, is Florida a community property state?
I'll lose most of my stuff. Let me put it that way.
All right. What about you, Steve?
No, I never had to fire a co-host. I've had people sub in for me for certain periods of time while I kind of took a break, and then I came back on. And even just coming back on was hard to tell them if they were into the show. Like, I just you did a great job, but I feel good to continue. And maybe. You want to do a show of your own or some other, come back on as a guest on another show or different things. I mean, every situation is different. I mean, it depends on the person. How are they screwing up? Are they just bad, or are they bad tempered? I mean, depending on the person would definitely, show how you have to handle the situation. You've had to go through it, Mark?
Yeah. Well, I think I've mentioned it on this show before. One of our Linux show, Everyday Linux, wasn't working in the beginning, and there was just a bad chemistry between the host. It just wasn't working. And we ended up doing just a full reboot totally. And when we came back, a couple of the hosts weren't with us anymore. And so, it was a bit of a tense situation there where I kind of had to say, we're going in a new direction, which doesn't include you. thanks for your time, but it's just not working. Again, that's just one of those things. Anytime if you're going to be a business about this and be business-like, I suspect that's going to happen. But hopefully you choose better in the beginning. And that I blame myself for that. I didn't choose well when I started that show from the beginning, but I chose better when we rebooted it. And now it's doing really well.
I think you nailed it. If you do handle it as a business type situation, then it's just a logical thing to do. And there should be some understanding there if that's established.
Well, now that you brought that up, Mark, there's something that Steve and I have been meaning to talk to you about.
You want me off the show?
Yeah, we're just trying to go a different direction, Mark. I hope you understand.
We just haven't figured out the fact that since you produce the entire thing, it's going to be difficult to get you out the door.
Yeah. You're going to lose half your stuff.
Half my stuff is gone.
Okay, so the next thing that I wanted to mention was... The environment. So you've called up a host, you've scheduled a host, or in your case, Steve, the host has raised up his hand and said, ooh, pick me. How do you go about making sure that they don't, you know, well, the shop guy, right, who was walking around in and out, how do you try to minimize that, to make sure that doesn't happen, you know, to try to make sure they have a quiet place to work and that the kids aren't there. And you know, I actually was doing a show at one point where the guy's cell phone rang and he answered it right in the middle of the podcast. And it was just, nice. While they were, it was a multi-guest thing. So while another guest was talking, he was just on his phone yapping away. And that was before I was doing multi-channel recording.
Oh,
and I couldn't do anything about it. So what are your recommendations for strongly suggesting that people find a quiet, out-of-the-way place with no dogs or kids?
Well, like I said before, I was pretty reckless about the whole thing, just saying, taking whoever would raise their hand first. What you said you did is send out an email with rules. I think that's a good idea. I did not do that. I've been lucky, and I just kind of, here's what I do. I just kind of hope that people who listen to my show have listened to past shows and would respect it enough to just do those things on their own. Most of the time it has panned out. Sometimes it hasn't.
Just handing it over to the universe.
Yes. Yes. Sometimes that's how I roll.
Yep. Just hope you have enough karma built up.
Right? Yeah, exactly. What do you say in your email, Mark, that you send your guys?
Well, it's evolved over time. You know, it's okay. Like an insurance disclaimer. Every time somebody does something stupid, there's a new line in the insurance disclaimer. That's kind of the way this thing is. But if I had anticipated that question, I would have actually pulled it up and I could have read it to you. But basically it says, this is how we do it. We recommend that you have a good headset mic, a quiet place to work. We recommend that you schedule this time. This is an appointment, just like any other appointment. And we discourage multitasking during this time. And you know, we it's respectful and we understand that we're imposing on you. We ask you to do this, but at the same time, we try to lay it out as like I said earlier, we want this to be as business-like a transaction as possible.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds good.
And then, you know, my partner in the business, Sean Keibel, he sort of does all, he comes out of the corporate background. He's good with the legalese. He does all that. And then as soon as they get on mic and they're talking to me, I say, okay, now if you're expecting a business-like professional experience, forget that, because we're just going to have a conversation and I'm a goofy guy. And so you had some expectations set, throw those all out the window. We're just going to have a good time. So it works out really well because they think they come into it with a mindset, and then I try to put them at ease as we go.
That's good. That's a good way to do it. They're probably like pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I hope so. James, you have a grin on your face that says you have something to say.
No, I just like the part where, you know, you were thinking this was going to be really, really straightforward, and then they sit down and talk to you, and I feel the same way sometimes when people are talking to me.
Yeah, and so let's talk now about the show notes, which in my case tends to be fairly extensive. But then one of the first things I tell them is, yeah, those show notes that we work so hard on, we're just going to throw those out the window. They're just sort of a plan, an idea, a roadmap, but not a script. So let's talk a little bit about that. And James, you have a note here that your show notes for what you do, especially for the ProfessorMesser.com stuff, is the biggest part of it. But what about for the podcast itself, for the Water Week podcast?
Well, in a way, that's the biggest part as well, I think. The What a Week podcast is a podcast that goes through items that were in the news this week that you aren't going to see on the mainstream media, on CNN, on NBC, on the Today Show, or any of those things. But they're still really, really interesting stories, and in some cases, really important stories about what's going on in the world around us. So throughout the week, I am looking for those stories. And my method is to use a lot of different kinds of websites. I'm not really looking for loopy, crazy news of the weird type stuff. I'm really looking for something like, we found a new planet this week. Nobody's heard about it on any of the news, but there it is, kind of scenario.
That's cool.
And so I'm looking at some very specific places. And when I find it, I make a lot of use of Instapaper, which is a fantastic resource. It's a place where you stick this little bookmarklet in your browser. And when you're on a page that's interesting to you, you click that bookmarklet and it sends a message over to Instapaper to capture that page. And Instapaper goes out at that point, pulls the entire page, essentially scrapes that entire page and stores it locally on Instapaper. And so I don't even have to think about it at that point. I go, yeah, that's a good one. And every time I see something good, I click it. That's a good one. That's a good one. That's a good one. And then at the end of the week, I have this enormous list made up. And what's nice about Instapaper is because it has cached it, I can pull up my Instapaper app on my mobile device, on my iPad. It caches it on my iPad, and I'm on planes all week. I get on a plane. I've still got everything locally. I don't need an internet connection at that point, and I can go through and figure out what I'd like to do with these stories. So in a way, I spend all week trying to find the stories that we're going to do. And you're right, for Professor Messer, most of the work is during this phase. I'm building out content for a training class. That training material needs to be dead on. Sometimes there's demonstrations. I have to think about what I'm going to say, how I'm going to say it, take complex ideas and parse them down into smaller pieces to make them understandable. That is a huge part of the vast majority of what I do on the Professor Messer side, is really doing that pre-show preliminary notes gathering, putting the information together, building the presentation, and getting it ready to shoot.
Okay. And when you share those, the Instapaper, the notes and stuff with your co-host, in this case, your wife, what methodology do you use there? Is she prepared, or is she hearing these for the first time?
We have made a decision, for better or worse, that when she finds stories, she doesn't tell me about them. When I find stories, I don't tell her about them. And it sometimes we'll catch ourselves during the week when we'll run across one when we're both doing our research. And she said, oh, I have this story about that. And I said, oh, we can't talk about that. You know, sorry, I can't talk to you right now. Save that for the show.
So at dinner, you're allowed to talk about the potatoes and the meat, and that's it.
What? How about this weather? Isn't that great? Did you see about the planet? No. Don't talk about that.
Yeah, on our news type show called The Periodic Table, I like it when my co-hosts haven't seen the stories, because you get the more natural reaction out of
sure.
them. And you know, generally you can tell they're reading the article as we go. I'm the only one who's read it. And sometimes, honestly, I haven't. But so as we're going, they'll be bringing out points. So you tell they're reading the article. And I like that interaction. It seems to make it more fun than if it were scripted. So
I agree.
Steve, what about you? How do you handle your show notes, your show prep for your guests?
Well, first of all, I hate doing show notes personally. It's like, it's almost torture to me. I can't imagine things that are worse than doing that.
Yeah, you certainly don't do a whole lot of contribution to the notes for this show. And I can tell
it's, saying.
You know, I'm not denigrating. I'm just saying that's you look at them, and then whatever you bring live rather than on paper.
Yeah, I'm going to blame childhood trauma for that or something. No, I definitely should. I should contribute more. I like winging things. That's fun to me. I actually get volunteers to do my show notes, because I don't like to do them. And the shows that do have show notes, volunteers have done them. I've thanked them before. I will thank them again. It's a huge help. Like James said, it's a huge part of building up your podcasting business, because search engines like text and they like content. So that's basically what your show notes are on the web. You need to have them if you want to get ranked. Yeah, a lot of things I'm going to talk about in this show is kind of like do what I say, not what I do. but that's one of them. I just get volunteers to do it for me.
So what about the document that you follow while you're doing your show? I mean, do you have a collaborative document like we have here in the Google Docs that you go with, and how does that get built?
Nah, just kind of wing it. Right. Well, see, here's the thing. The way my shows are set up, I guess I kind of fell into this by – it's just I wanted to do the least amount of work as possible. So here's how my shows are set up. On Podnuts Daily, which is about computer repair, the person who's the guest brings all the content. And when he's done talking about things, I read the emails that I get. So I don't have to prepare anything for that show. The Linux show I do with Door-to-Door Geek – he brings all the stuff for that too. So I follow along with the show notes, but I don't bring any. I am just becoming the host guy. The one show where I did have to bring stuff was one kind of like the Periodic Table, and also like What a Week. It was called Nuts at Night, where we all kind of brought some type of news that not many people have heard of or we think is interesting. And for that one, I did have to prepare. And I just, every time I came across something, I threw something in like a notepad in my phone and then brought it to the show. Other than that, my network is kind of set up for me to just show up, turn on a mic, call somebody, and roll.
And that's a pretty good way to go, if you can make that happen. Nice job if you can get it.
Yes, exactly.
And of course, I'm telling you guys what you already know because we're looking at it right now. But for the benefit of the audience, we have a template document for everything that we do. I have the intro with the title in there, and that's I go into Ron Burgundy mode when I'm reading that first part. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Art of Podcasting. I'm just reading what I've written there. That's pre-written on every show. And then we get to the thing where, you know, I always say this week will whatever, that's all scripted. And I just read that. And then I have a section called warm up. And that's where this week we talked about Easter and about driving to Florida, just stuff that doesn't have anything to do with the show, but that lets you get to know the host a little better. And I think that's as important as anything else. And on some of our shows, Everyday Linux, namely, that part can be most of the show sometimes before we actually get to the stuff. But again, I think that's an important part of it. And then I have a section just called discussion points where I go in and I list the things that I think we should talk about or the questions that I want answered. And I go in there and I try to do as detailed a way as possible. I think it's better to have a lot of detail and not cover it than to have no detail and then find yourself going, okay, so what do you want to talk about next? So I have that area and these guys can tell you, I kind of go crazy. One of the first couple of things where I had the headline discussion notes, James typed in way too many discussion points.
That's true. I did.
Yeah. And then there, the last thing is just the wrap up. That's the wind down where we talk about contact information, all that. And so that's the template I use for all of my shows. We're going to follow that on every one of our shows. And then I share that document out. I try to do it several days ahead of time to anybody who's going to be on the show and encourage them. You get in there and you talk about the discussion points. You add things, you delete things. If you don't want to talk about that, you go right ahead. And when there's going to be a guest on, you know, we tell them that the warm up and the wind down won't apply to you. We're just going to interview you and go. So I try to lay out all the expectations and all the pots. I told you I was anal. I told you from the beginning, but that's the way I do things. And so on this one, we have 25 or so bullet points. We're probably not going to hit all of them. We've already skipped some of them, but it's better, like I said, to have them and not do them. Or we combine them and, you know, we may answer the last bullet point in the first sentence, and that's okay. It's just a recommendation, not a script. I don't like scripted. I've heard podcasts, lots of podcasts, where they read a script or read a large part of it, or there'll be a section that's read and a part that's talked. And I don't like to hear that personally. It sounds robotic. Even the really good people who are excellent at what they do, you can tell the difference between their reading and when they're talking. So I don't like to read. I like to talk. So that's a long dissertation there. So I'm just going to ask you guys, what do you think of the notes that I've provided to you? If you were, well, you are a guest on the show, but if you were going to be a guest on a show, is that something that you would want to see? Is that intimidating, or is it too much, or is it too little? Just what do you think? Steve, we'll go with you first.
Well, I think if you do want to give notes to your guests, the way you do it is perfect. It really is. Using Google Docs where anybody could just go in there and add and change things is awesome. It really is a good idea. I enjoy it. It's totally fine with me. Me personally, and this is just personal, I could kind of go either way. If you had no notes and you just said, let's start, and you just started talking, I would be fine with that too. But for somebody who wants some structure, notes give a good expectation of what you're going to be talking about, and then they could kind of prepare stuff in their mind. So I think most people are like that. I don't think everyone's like me. So I think the way you do it's perfect.
All right, James, what is your thoughts on that?
I can spend 15 minutes talking about a stick I found, so I have no problem just figuring out something to say if somebody asks me. I've trained myself to talk too much along those lines. So to Steve's point, I don't necessarily need any show notes either, but I'm also someone who really appreciates the organization involved in conversations and what we're doing. And I go into this probably earlier today during the day. I open up the document and I go through and I start adding my little things in there because it does get me thinking about different topics. And I try to make a note in here. In fact, there was one where I made a note and I didn't make enough notes. And I came in later and I couldn't figure out what I meant by that. And I ended up deleting it because I still can't figure out what I meant by that. So sometimes my notes work against me. along those lines. But either way, I think is completely reasonable for any type of podcast. Technical people, we tend to try to pick sides in different things. I was listening to a conversation today where we were talking about Linux and talking about the presentation manager GNOME, or as some people insisted the name was GNOME. And I happened to find a quote by the gentleman who created the product. And when asked, how should we pronounce it? He said, I don't care how, name it one way or the other. We're flexible, whatever.
Right.
Doesn't matter. And I think some people's heads exploded at that. No, it has to be one or the other, but it doesn't. It's whatever makes sense for you.
Yeah. It's the Linux thing.
You know? Right. No, what? No, it has to be called that. You have to do it with notes. You must, or no, we can't use notes. You just go with what makes sense.
Yeah. And I didn't mention, Steve did, but yeah, Google Docs is my tool of choice because anybody can get to it with a web browser. You do have to have a Google account, but I assume most people do. And if you don't, it's easy to set one up. I have walked through people through sometimes how to set one of those up. And that's just the way we do it because it's live, it's real time. And we've had people, because they're just that kind of person, who went through and did all the note preparation and then printed it out and had it in front of them when they did the show. And, you know, if that's what works for you, great. But I think that you can't be too prepared. So that's why I try to do extensive notes on this. In fact, you know, looking at this outline this week, I was afraid it wasn't going to be enough. And here we are 46 minutes in and we've only hit like three or four of the bullet points.
Yeah, we're good, Mark. I mean, we're all pros here. We could stretch this out and shorten it, do whatever we want.
So the next notes, I'm going to have a section called James's Stick.
Looking for a stick right now.
Talking about the stick he found.
You're somewhere.
So, James, you said something about a scripted material here. And what was your point there that is scripted material good or bad? I couldn't quite tell by what you wrote there.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
I used to have a position, as I mentioned, in sort of a corporate marketing gig. And that position was one that allowed me to do a lot of different kinds of media, video, audio, podcasts, a lot of different kinds of things. And one of the things I did was product demonstrations. You've seen go to the corporate website, click here for the product demonstration. And sometimes it's you're watching a flash presentation and there's a voiceover. Hello, thank you for looking at our flash presentation. Today, we are going to show you all of the features about version 4.7.
I think a part of it just died.
3. just awful. In some of those things, you do need some of it to be scripted, but it needs to be as natural as you can make it. And a lot of that deals with the copy. People don't realize the copy, the writing of what you're doing on these scripts is incredibly important. You can't just throw something on a piece of paper and hope for the best. And it really does take a special kind of skill and sometimes a bunch of people sitting around trying to figure it out. And it needs to have a natural tone about it and being able to do those things. Or you need to be the kind of person who can look at a script and say it naturally and skip around and get the points across to what people are trying to do. So in some of those cases, I really did need it to be very formal. I think personally, when dealing with the type of topics that we do that are usually very technical, we're usually demonstrating these very, very detailed ideas to people, that we keep it as broad and high level and simple as possible. And whenever I'm demonstrating something, I used to have a very tight script of exactly what I'd say, but I find really casual is something that's more appealing to listen to. And even if there's an or I type something wrong or I'm showing it, it doesn't have to be 100% perfect. It just needs to get the point across. It does need to be professional. It does need to have those things associated with it. But we're all people. We understand that there will be pauses and people saying, and I will mistype things from time to time.
Yeah. When I was, one of the things that I studied in college was communications. And one of the things we talked about was the non-dialectic speech, which doesn't actually exist. There is no accent in the world. It's only the accent that people on television and radio use. So as I've worked on that, I made a conscious decision to not give up all my Southern. You know, I still rarely put a G on an ING, and I still say ah instead of I. And I did that intentionally because you don't want to sound sterile. You want to sound comprehensible, but not sterile. And it's the same thing when I'm reading a script. Even if I'm reading a script, I will do it in such a way that there are faults there, and there, because it humanizes you. It makes you more relatable, like you said. If you're always perfect all the time, you're not believable. And when people decide you're not believable, they lose interest.
I have to agree. I'm not a fan of scripts either. The problem is, if you do have to use a script, there's skill involved in reading it, because the whole idea of a podcast is communication. Like, we are communicating to the listeners, and a communication means that they have to receive the ideas that we're trying to convey here. If you don't use a script, there's no vias in the way of you and your listener. It's just you talking, listener listening. Now, if you do want to read a script, I mean, I've done a communication course where it's just something you can actually drill, where you take a line out of a newspaper, something or whatever, and you have a twin on this course, and you pick a line, you look at the line, you read it to yourself, you understand the idea, the concept, and then you deliver it to the other person. This way, you're not just reading words to the other person, because that is just not communication. It's not going to be received. And like you said, it's going to sound sterile and boring. But you can take information on a script or a piece of written material. If you make it your own idea and deliver that idea to the person, it could even be the exact wording, but it's coming from you, not the paper. That's tolerable. That's listenable. That is true communication. So it's, if you don't feel like you have the ability to do this, it's just something that you can drill. It's not necessarily natural. Some people are better at it than others, but, don't fret is basically what I'm saying. It can be done, but yeah, I'm not a big fan of scripts in the first place, but if you have to use one, practice.
One of the bits of listener feedback we've had so far, it was a listener said, I'd like you to do a show on what it takes to be a podcaster from the guy behind the mic perspective. You know, we've talked about the mechanics of it and that sort of thing, but not actually how to host a podcast. So that's one of the things that we're going to talk about in a future episode, which I think will be interesting. Cool. Because we'll talk about those skills and those things that there is a difference between a talent and a skill. And there are things that you can learn that don't come naturally to you, and that's okay. And the how you know you're really good is when it looks easy, and it's not. You know, Tiger Woods makes golf look easy. Anybody who's ever played golf knows it's not. So if you listen to somebody and you think, they sound perfectly natural, they make it sound so easy, that means they put a lot of work into it. They have worked to make it sound like they don't work.
Exactly. I'm with you.
Okay, and the last thing I wanted to get to is the scheduling, and that always gets to be a nightmare eventually. So I thought that you guys might have some ideas around that. The way we do this show, for example, was I sent these guys out and said, hey, I want to do the show. I want to invite you both to be on it. And we want to schedule this show. When can we do it? And then it was probably 4 weeks of emails back and forth saying, no, that time's not good for me. All right, let me go talk with Steve and see if that works for him. No, that doesn't work for him. But Steve can do this. Can you do? No, that doesn't work. Can we do that? So here we are at 10 p.m. Central Time, or 10, was it 11? It's 10 Central, 11 Eastern, right, on a Sunday night, which is kind of a ridiculous time. But that's when we're all available. So that's how we schedule it. And so, do you guys have any suggestions there? For example, with hosts, let me say, I ask a question and I'm going to interrupt it with an answer. What we discovered on our Taiwan Tech Show that is mostly guest driven is we used to say, when are you available? We stopped saying that. Now we say, we record at this time. Can you be available on this date at this time? That gives them a simple yes or no. The answer is no. Okay. Can you be available on this range of dates? Yes or no. But if you tell people, and what we found is, when are you available? Oh, well, I was thinking next Thursday morning at 4 a.m. would work really well for me. Can you guys do that? And, you know, sometimes you have to make arrangements for that. Like, we've interviewed people 11 time zones away. So it's late for them and it's early for us and it's not our regular recording time. And sometimes you have to do that. But I found that the best general rule is to give people a yes or no option and then go from there. Comments, Steve?
Yeah, you nailed it. I was just going to say that. Make a certain time that you do your show and tell people that's when you do it. And if there is going to be any choice of theirs, it's going to be, well, which Sunday can you do? You know, we have these Sundays open when we do the show at this time. It keeps your sanity as a host and a producer of podcasts. And that's the best way to do it.
And if it's a guest that you really want and they will never be available at 11 p.m. Eastern time on a Sunday, then you work around that. Like
totally
time zone math. I talked about, we talked to somebody in Saudi Arabia, and that's I think 16 and a half, which I think was interesting. There's a half hour difference there. It's not an exact hour, hours difference. And so we had to work that out, but because we wanted to do that show, we did. We got up extra early and he stayed up extra late and it worked out.
I've done that too. I mean, we're dealing with the planet Earth, exactly. Which has many time zones. And yes, you have to make, you know, some concessions now and then, but it's like you said, if you want to really want to have somebody on, you make it convenient for them and you do it.
James, you have anything to say on that?
Well, because my co-host is my wife, we naturally have arranged the podcast to be after Taekwondo lessons, but before horse riding.
There you go. And subject to change once Taekwondo lessons are over and horse riding lessons have changed, right?
I subject can't tell to James whatever. Is serious.
So, no, that's absolutely serious. It's subject to whatever she tells me it is.
You say yes, ma'am, and that's how you stay married, right?
It's a simple process.
Reminds me of a joke, but I won't tell it. I'm just going to leave you hanging. So another thing is, invariably, something is going to happen that blows your plans. How do you handle that? James, start with you. Let's say Taekwondo lessons gets moved up an hour. What do you do?
Let's say the washer and dryer breaks.
There you go.
Just saying. Or things move around, or we have a Taekwondo event that is one of those things all day. Those do happen, and we try to work around them since it's just me and her, and generally we're in the same place. When we're doing these things, it works out okay. I try to give everybody announcements to let them know that this week's going to be a little bit different, just so everybody knows on Facebook, on Twitter, and that type of thing. But generally, just try to just keep the lines of communication open.
All right, Steve, what about you?
Yeah, communication is key here. I mean, really try, if you schedule a show up with somebody, really try to keep it for the rest of the time I do this show, every time I talk about this, I'm going to be thinking in the back of my mind about that show 2 weeks ago. Anyway, if you do have to cancel or change the time of your show, let the person know as soon as you can. I would be very apologetic about it. And if you do communicate with people, it's surprising how well they will understand. You know, I've had to change shows on short notice and I'm like, I'm so sorry. And they're like, dude, no problem. Just chill out. And people are very understanding, but don't push it. I would really try to just keep the schedule and let them know as soon as can, communicate freely and honestly with them. Honesty is a big point here. And you don't want to be caught in any lies. Be honest and you'll be okay.
So if given the choice between working hard to cram in a show because it was off schedule or just canceling the show, which would you choose, Steve?
Cramming in a show, you mean you don't have enough time to prepare or do it?
And right. Well, like it just really blows your schedule entirely. And you're going to have to do something and you don't think you can do it well because of that. Like your guest changed last minute and you don't have time to prepare, or, it's going to be, you know, after a 16 hour shift and you're going to be tired, you know, something like that. I'm just trying to come up with some example where the show you think is not going to be at its normal level of excellence because of some last minute derailment. Do you do it and not do it well, or do you just skip it?
If you know it's not going to be good and you're certain of it, I would probably try to reschedule. But if you're just nervous that it may not, those sometimes turn out being the best shows when you're kind of under pressure, under fire. But if there's certain circumstances where you know it's just going to be a train wreck, then I would reschedule, not even try to sacrifice the quality of your show.
James, you have a comment there?
Well, as it turns out, we're going to have to make this decision probably at the end of this show or sometime in the near future. I just put in the show notes that I'm not going to be available for our normal scheduling time later this month on another
unacceptable
show.
Unacceptable, James. That's so unacceptable.
You're fired.
Okay. Let's talk about off the rails. That's one of those things that we have to figure out now. Do we want to schedule it at a different time, or do we want to go through with it and have you two do the show, or do I get on a cell phone and pipe it in, you know, that type of thing. So there's a decisions we have to make, and it's always going to be something that's fluid. You kind of have to be flexible and just go with the flow.
Yeah, I don't ever like to just miss a show, but I'm willing to if I have to. I would rather not do a show than do a show badly. But, you know, as I mentioned, I think a couple of weeks ago, maybe last week, I try to schedule things in such a way that that is very unlikely to happen. I try to build in a big lead time as much as possible on the shows. Like, for example, on this show, we record on Sundays and we release on Wednesdays. So if it doesn't work Sunday, we could record Monday night or Tuesday night and still manage to hit our Wednesday release date. And if that doesn't work, we could release on Thursday or Friday. You know, so there's options there, but I like to have a set release schedule. I know, Steve, this was the week you weren't here, so I'm interested to get your input on this while we're talking about it.
I heard on the show that I release, you say, well, I release them whenever I want.
I said that was my impression.
I try to do them on Sundays and usually Monday at the latest. I do them all in one day. I save them all up to the end of the week and do them all in one day. So it's usually Sunday night late. Or Monday night, probably late too. That's what I do.
All right. And that's fine. That as I said on that show, I like to have things at a very set time because, as I think we've established here, I'm pretty neurotic.
Can I also say something that I think goes really along with what you're saying?
No, I'm sorry. It's not in the notes. We can't talk about it.
If you do schedule something and in your mind, you know that that's the time you do it, things tend to just move out of the way. And for example, I'm just really surprised I've done as many shows as I can without things coming up. My schedule is just open on those times because I'm always thinking with it, I can't do something because I'm doing this at that time. So once you set and decide when you're going to do your show, you'll be surprised how much of the universe kind of gets out of the way for that. So it's just really important to set a standard time.
Steve's all about invoking the power of the universe tonight.
My chakra's all aligned.
Bless you. I guess I'm just feeling it right now.
So I had a thought and I lost it, so it must have died of loneliness.
By the way, James will be unavailable on my birthday, so that might be a good day not to do a show.
Oh, see how that works out?
See? Told you. Perfect.
Hey, we did a show on my birthday. We did.
And?
I'm just saying, I'm here for you. I'm the trooper.
April Fools.
So yeah, that's an interesting conundrum there, where you talk about the scheduling. Is because I am a planning centric person, I like to make sure that can't happen. Like for example, this week, one of our shows, the One Meal One Workout show, we typically record on Wednesdays. We're going to do a Wednesday and a Thursday on that one because something came up and we're working around it. But also I also do another show, Periodic Table, on Thursday. So I'm doing two shows on Thursday after working 10 hours that day. So it's not exactly the ideal way of doing things, but it's what you got to do sometimes to make things work. But it kind of depends on the tone of your show. Like I said, we like to do things around here in a very business-like manner and get things done. But if your audience just looks at it and says, oh, new podcast, and they're not really looking for a particular date, then it's not going to be a big deal. It kind of depends on the expectations that you've set.
Right. Good point.
Anything else? Any other sage words of wisdom?
For scheduling? For anything. I think we're good.
All right. I think I'm pretty well done with my notes. The only bullet point I have left is, what else?
That is my patter line for Podnuts Daily. You ask me what my show notes are for Podnuts Daily. I just come on the show and just say what else about 10 times. And after my guest has basically told a story and told me some tips, I say, oh, cool, what else? And then he's telling me some more. I say, what else? And then I read emails and that's it. That's the show.
So I should have put a little TM Steve Cherubino when I wrote
that. Yes. Yes.
Any other final words of wisdom from the professor?
No, I think we covered the bases. Getting your act together before you actually are ready to record your podcast can sometimes really help you a lot, as long as you don't overthink things. Sometimes the notes help with what you're doing. I'm someone who has spent so much time on the preliminaries. Literally hours go into building the content, then it's a particular topic that's close to my heart.
PC Freddy, the chat room, used one of Steve's lines. Empty the tank. This is it, guys. Empty the tank.
Empty the tank.
I do that on Android App Addicts. Yeah, it's like, that line has stuck.
Yeah, it basically means, well, I'm tired of talking to you now. Let's finish this show.
You know, I do have a question for you, Mark.
All right.
Were you a Boy Scout?
I was a Boy Scout, yes.
Because I want that skill and that quality you have about being prepared. Did you actually do that, something like that, in Boy Scouts?
Well, that is the Boy Scout motto, be prepared.
Be prepared, yes. But, not Boy Scout.
I have always been one of those laser-focused kind of people. Everything I do in my life, I set a goal and I move relentlessly toward it. And that is certainly a skill that you can do. You know, people talk about the whole getting things done philosophy and all that. But for me, it's just the way I am. I'm a very much a type A personality. And it's just, I'm going to make a plan. I'm going to see that plan through. I'm going to see it from the beginning to the middle to the end before I ever start.
Well, it's a fantastic quality to have as a person. It really is.
Thanks. I started down the road of being a Boy Scout, and then I realized you had to go outside.
Yeah. What were they thinking?
You could find sticks, James, to look at.
Not my thing at all.
I, you know, when I say I was a Boy Scout, I don't think I made it past Tenderfoot. I wasn't a Boy Scout for long, but yeah, I was a Boy Scout for a while.
You got the gist. It counts. You got the badge.
I did. I got the badge. I had the shirt and the little bolo tie.
So, very nice.
It was all the rage. It really made me cool. It didn't get me beat up at all.
Nice.
Okay, guys, that's it. So this is the time where you plug your stuff. Start with you, Steve.
Cool. We're not going to do lessons learned?
Oh, yeah, I forgot that. See, I skipped over that section in the notes.
It's a good thing we have notes.
That's right, yeah, because Steve was right there with the notes. Okay, yeah, lessons learned. So, Steve, what's your lesson learned this week?
This actually isn't a lesson learned. I know I break this rule every week. This is more just of a tip, because I don't think I've really gotten in trouble with this. But my advice to you is not to get in as a podcaster, and you know, you're now becoming a public figure, not to get into flame wars, talk smack, get upset publicly, and you know, get in fights as a podcaster, because it's just not worth it. If somebody does want to start something with you, I would just use this, you know, cliched line, but be the better man, you know, and don't really retaliate unless they're attacking something and spreading false information about your show and false rumors or something. But if they just want to start and they want to get mad, and or if you just don't like a person for some reason, I really do not advise publicly getting involved in these types of things, because it could only come back to hurt your show. And don't do it for the protection of your own show, is my advice. There might be opportunities come up, even people in the chat room giving you crap or whatever comes up. Be the better man, and you know, don't retaliate unless they're spreading false information about you. Basically,
I get the feeling there's a deeper context to that, but
no, there really isn't. There really isn't. It's just something that I decided I was going to do from the beginning. And whenever I had an opportunity where a bunch of people were talking bad about somebody, and I have an opportunity to be like, yeah, you know what? I think he's a real jerk, or I think that show sucks. I resist, and just stay up tone, be better, be the better man. And it's just for the safety of your show. It's a good thing to do as a business person.
All right. James, what did you learn this week?
Well, whenever we're doing these kinds of things, creating these audio podcasts, building the videos and those types of things, there's this part that we're doing right now where we are talking into a microphone, talking about these different things that are in the show notes and going through the details of these. And then once we turn off the recording, we have all of these technical processing things that have to be done. And there's a lot of technical things that have to happen on the back end For me, I have a lot of video, so there's a ton of pre-rendering. There's a ton of video editing. There's a ton of post-rendering that happens afterwards. So a lot of this is this technical engine, this motor that is running, all of these gears and cogs that are going around in circles. And I've spent a lot of time on the front end building these scripts that will take the raw materials and cut them up and render them and do different things with them all the way through the process. It's the motor stops. It allows me to edit. Then I throw it back into the scripts, and then they produce the post edited versions of them. And I spent a lot of time on those scripts, pulling things from other parts on the web. And this week it really helped me a lot because I finished over the 100th video in one of the courses that I'm working on. I look back, I've got 100 videos. I need 3 different formats of these to deploy. One that's for a mobile device, one that is high definition on a desktop, one that's an MP3. And I've already written the script. So to create those, to build effectively 300 different formats of these things, I just started my script and I walked away. I went to bed. And in the morning I got up and it had done everything. And it's one of those times where if you spend a lot of time on the front end getting things exactly the way you need them to be so that you can automate the process, it's going to help you in the long run.
Absolutely. That's one of the mindsets I've said all through my career as a technician and into podcasting is if you can spend 5 hours today to save you 5 minutes 100,000 times, do it.
So true.
Because I think it's brilliant. I think you should sell them, James, as like the professor's podcasting scripts or something. I think that you have a product there.
It's my secret sauce now. I want to hold them tighter.
It's really smart.
And my lesson learned this week is simple. Bacon makes everything better. Mm. That's all I get to say. I don't like asparagus. So my wife took the asparagus, wrapped it in bacon and baked it. And I ate 12 of them. So bacon makes everything better. That's all I got to say.
That's awesome.
Nice.
It wouldn't be an Element OP podcast if we didn't mention bacon.
Love bacon.
Okay, so now we'll get to the part where you plug your stuff. So please, Steve.
My product to plug openly and blatantly is my videos at howtopodcast.biz. If you want to learn how to podcast and you enjoy the content in this show, these are right down your alley. They're reasonably priced. It is a complete brain dump of how I started PodNuts from scratch about 4 years ago. And I think you'll like them. So check it out.
All right. And Mr. James, Professor Messer.
For some absolutely free IT training that you would normally pay thousands of dollars for to buy this off the shelf, watch it absolutely free on ProfessorMesser.com. And for that What a Week podcast I mentioned earlier, you can see it and subscribe at whataweekpodcast.com.
Awesome. I am a subscriber to it, and it does provide me at least one chuckle every week.
Why, thank you, sir. I'll take it.
And right now, my product is this show and others like it at elementop.com. Go there. We have 6 or 5 other shows, 6 in total. And hopefully you will find some of them entertaining, enlightening, and we do mention bacon fairly often. And as I mentioned last week, I do have a product forthcoming, a book on podcasting and writing. I actually started this podcast just to sell my book. I don't have a book yet.
Good for you.
But once I have a book, I will be plugging it like crazy on this podcast because that's nice. The whole reason I started this.
I would buy a bacon book if you wrote one.
Okay, I'll get right to work on that. As soon as I'm finished with the podcasting book, I'll write a bacon book.
Okay.
Maybe I'll write the Fat Podcaster's Cookbook. How about that?
I love that.
I've actually been considering doing a cooking show. I think it would be a lot of fun. I don't know if I could get guests or hosts or how that would work, but it would be interesting because that's a hobby of mine that I've pursued for a long time.
Well, you know, our friend Door to Door Geek and a couple other guys are doing podbrewers.net where they talk about home brewing and just different beers. And they're having a ball doing it. So I think a food show would be good.
Yeah, I haven't listened to Pod Brewers because I don't like beer. I think beer is punishment for violent crimes. So it's not really my sort of thing. And on that note, which I think was an A flat, I will say that ends this episode of... What show is this? The Art of Podcasting.